This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark, Wang Xiaoning and Roshan Kanison. It is 6 o'clock in the morning, Monday the 6th of January. And I do believe this is the first Monday of the new year, isn't it?
I know, time really flies, doesn't it?
It really does. So how is this Monday treating you both?
Pretty good. It's pretty good. I'm looking forward to the week. It's a very, very busy week. We've got some interesting programming coming up. But yeah, I am looking forward to the week.
I mean, it's a great Monday. I mean, it's a great way to start the first full work week of the year.
Yes,
it is. It just occurs to me that there will be no public holidays until Chinese New Year. And then after that, there won't be any public holidays until May, I think.
Because yes, for Labor Day.
Taipusam and Federal Territories Day are on Saturdays, which means we will not be getting those Mondays off. So unlike last year, everyone be prepared for winter is coming in terms of holidays.
I like that. Yeah. But there is Chinese New Year, so let's not be so depressed, right? Because the feasting has begun already, guys.
But even one day has been cannibalized for Chinese New
Year. Yeah, because it falls on a Saturday. Mm-hmm. This year is very bad for the Saturday public holidays.
It is. But, you know, I think for most of us, we still haven't quite gotten out of the holiday mood. I think the holiday mood will fully start to dissipate once Chinese New Year is over. You know, I went to some of the malls over the weekend, and the decorations are really out in full force. And actually, they came out. Some of them came out on Boxing Day.
Yeah, yeah. That's the joke that I always say. You know, if you go to like any mall, right? So. On the 25th, they're still playing Christmas carols. And then on the 26th, they start playing Chinese New Year music. And, you know, the God of Fortune has arrived because it's the Chinese song, right? And it's suddenly a blaze of red everywhere because of Chinese New Year. I mean, it's basically, when you think about it, the malls are all just there to make as much money as possible, right? So quickly change the festivities, usher in a new period of shopping. And that's what they're all trying to do. But it's not bad. It's quite fun to go and check out all the mall decorations.
So is that what you were up to this weekend?
Yes, shopping for Chinese New Year already.
Well, I was taking a read on Bloomberg Business Week, as I do every weekend, apparently. And I saw this article about words and phrases that really define the decade. These include things like, simple things like quantitative easing, to cloud computing, to too big to fail. Now, too big to fail is something that we take for granted today, but it's only come up in the last 10 years. Mm. And then you realize it's because it was only 10 years ago that we saw the financial crisis. So we'll be going through some of these other terms that have defined the decade.
And what else are we going to be talking about?
Well, we're going to be talking about who we admire and does that change over time, you know?
All right. Now, if you want to weigh in on those conversations, you can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we'll be talking about some resolutions made in January and whether or not January is actually a bad time to start setting goals. Be sure to stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was Ready for Love by Bad Company. And you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Xiaoning and Roshan. Now, it's January, which means that a lot of us are still kind of recovering from the December Christmas and New Year holidays. If you're anything like me, that is, you would have found it quite exhausting. And this is the reason why some people say that actually maybe it's not such a good idea to be making resolutions in the very first month of the year. And Fast Company takes a look at this in an article because it suggests that, you know, January is the time when you're really only just starting to get back to normal after a week of, for a lot of people, enforced socialization and, you know, just generally a lot of activity. So, you know, sometimes maybe you're being a little bit too unrealistic with yourself in January.
Yeah, December is a weird month. You've got a lot of family, you've got friends, you've got parties, you've got lunches. Also, it's a bit of a quieter month. Even the markets are slowing down, business, and everyone is going into that holiday mood. So you can come off, you're not at your normal self as you would be maybe in the middle of January or in February. Mm-hmm. Oh, actually in Malaysia, because we've got Chinese New Year, so that extends a little bit longer. But let's just say March or April, where you are in your normal work self, your day-to-day self. So you, it becomes a bit more difficult because you can be maybe overly optimistic over how good you're feeling. Or if the holiday season has got you feeling down, then you can be overly pessimistic about what you can do.
But then is there ever a good time to make these resolutions, right? For me, why not start at the beginning of the year? I mean, yeah, your mood might be a little bit off, but it's kind of a good, clean way to start the year, isn't it? With certain kind of things in your mind that, okay, I want to change A, B, C, D, or I want to improve A, B, C, D. middle of the year, March, April seems like a very weird time, right?
Yeah, I don't think it's an excuse not to start these things. I think it comes down to being realistic. You know, sometimes you come off from the positivity from being around. First and foremost, work's a bit more of a lull. So you feel like you have all this extra time. You're like, you know what? I can learn 3 languages next year. And then you realize that you can't because work comes back to full speed at some point.
I think then the resolution in January should have been, I need to have a better grip on reality rather than I need to learn 3 languages.
Or very simply, it could be if you want to learn another language, just be like, I'm going to watch this show dubbed in a different language, then at least exposure to that. It's keeping the goals simplistic and realistic.
And keeping goals small, ultimately, because, you know, we've been talking about goal setting for so far, a number of times so far this January, and that is one of my key takeaways from it, is it's just that you have to keep your daily targets small and easily achievable so that you don't get discouraged. Because it's very easy to say, oh, you know, it's really difficult, I'm not going to do it, and you skip one day, and then you skip another day, and then you end up not doing whatever it is that you set out to do.
Yeah, I think also how you set your goals, okay? So they have to be identifiable, something like specific, achievable.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's say you want to learn French, for example. I'll just take one example, okay? So you want to learn French, but you want to learn French part one, okay, or level one, by, and then set a timeline by August 2020. And how you're doing this is because you're going to sign up with a course at Alliance Francaise, and, you know, that's how you're going to achieve it. I think then if you break it down, then the goals don't look so impossible, right? Because you've got a definitive plan to get there. Or like you want to lose, typically everybody starts, and I'm guilty of it, lose that 5 pounds. I will do it by healthy eating. I will exercise X number of days a week, something like that. Then maybe these goals don't become so implausible or impossible.
Yeah, I started. So if you want to kick off the year on a good note, what I tried this year actually, what I tried last year was during the last 2 weeks of December, I started implementing the certain habits I wanted to carry forward into the new year. So things like, actually my most important goal right now, or habit I'm trying to build, is not to snooze my alarm. And I've been doing that since from the last 2 weeks of December. And so far, so good. I've done 3 weeks of that. And it's about starting small. So it's a very specific goal. It's no snooze, or wake up within 7 minutes of my first alarm. First alarm being the key there. So it's about establishing smart goals and keeping to it. And I personally use a habit tracker to track these things. Yes, I'm that kind of person. I'm the person who lives by the mantra of what gets measured gets managed.
Yeah, so I also kind of started on some of my New Year's goals in the last couple of weeks of December. So things like trying to make it to the gym more often, because these are the kinds of goals that realistically, you know, I make them every year. And there's never a time when it's a bad thing necessarily to say go to the gym. But ultimately, I think we just have to embrace the idea that we can introduce these goals during the other 11 months of the year as well. Yes, January is a good start, but if you are making resolutions in January, you have to be realistic about them, and you have to understand how your routines and how your energy levels may change as you head into different parts of the year.
So what changed with your goal this year? Because you're saying that you use go to the gym every year. What was different with the language this time?
I was a little bit more, I was a little bit more measurable. So 2 times a week. And I actually tell people about this goal.
So we can shame you into it.
Absolutely. So, you know, I give you full, all the permission that you'd like to chase me out of the office to go to the gym, Shani.
And I will.
Absolutely. Okay, and do let us know what you think about this. Is January a good time to set goals? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We are coming up on a few messages, and then we'll be taking a look at some people we may have admired in 2019. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was If I Ever Was a Child by Wilco, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Shanning and Roshan. Now, another look back into 2019 very quickly. Fast Company has another article talking about, you know, people we admire in the world. And when you ask someone, you know, oh, who is it that you admire? A lot of people will say, a family member, perhaps a figure like the Dalai Lama or something. But apparently, in America, there was a survey done by Gallup. It turns out that a lot of them admire politicians because on the most admired man poll, Barack Obama and Donald Trump tied for the title of the most admired man of 2019.
It's like a yin and a yang kind of thing, right? I mean, both of them are sharing the same position. It's kind of so odd.
Yeah, what I found interesting about this poll, though, was that generally it is the incumbent president that wins the poll. But the fact that Donald Trump didn't win it outright, that he had to, that he tied with Barack Obama, means that is a signal of what's the word I'm looking for here? Discord within the Americans themselves. They're not unified in their love and admiration of Donald Trump.
Well, he's kind of always had one of the lowest satisfaction ratings, right?
Yeah.
For a sitting president. I guess he's one of those characters, if you ask me, you really, really, really either love him, ? Or you really, really, really wonder what he's doing in the White House. That one I have no question mark.
So for me, the interesting thing also is the flip side, right? The most admired woman part of this poll. Because the first lady of the United States also usually makes it onto this poll because it's partly as a function of the first lady's position. You know, the president of the United States, he's going to make some unpopular decisions whether or not you love him or you hate him. But the first lady usually takes up a cause like charities, education, girls, women's rights, or something along those lines that tends to appeal to a wider audience. And this year, for the second year in a row, Michelle Obama won the title of most admired woman, and she's of course the former first lady. Current first lady Melania Trump came in second, mentioned by only 5% of the poll respondents.
And note that she took first place. This is after the presidency, so she's become incredibly popular over the last few years, even in the Barack Obama's last few years.
Remember, I think there were calls for her to run for president at some point.
Why not start another dynasty of presidential elects? But she became very popular for her MOVE campaign, for being healthy, for calling out, for being very bold in her statements. And she's only just doubled down on it. I mean, she was in Malaysia a few weeks ago, and that was quite an event.
Yeah, I mean, she did come out to say that, you know, being a presidential wife does have its sacrifices, but she treated it like a job, right? I mean, she said that she would be working like for 3 days, but when she was working for those 3 days, it was like nonstop, 6 a.m. to midnight all the way, right? But, you know, you do need to set aside time for yourself, for your family, and look after your kids so that you have some normal balance. But the interesting thing about this is I challenge you all to think, what is Melania Trump's cause? Huh, which is probably why she doesn't feature on this poll, right?
Isn't her cause bullying?
It's actually so that children be best. That's her tagline, best.
Yeah, but it's something about bullying.
Yeah,
right?
But it hasn't really kind of gotten the kind of limelight like when Michelle Obama was in the White House, for sure.
Yeah, and I remember there was just some irony surrounding it when she first announced that her cause, because a lot of people do complain that President Donald Trump uses his power in office to bully people. So it was ironic then that his first lady should have chosen that as the cause she wanted to champion while she's in the White House.
Yeah, I think it's also just because of, it's just pure charisma, right? Between the two, Melania Trump doesn't have as much charisma as Michelle Obama, same as Barack. Barack, the two of them, the Obamas together, are the charismatic duo of the decade, right? They are instantly likable, even if you disagree. I mean, Barack Obama was not a perfect president. There were many things that he did that were questionable, but he just has that amazing likability, as opposed to Trump, who has likability in some sectors for his brutish nature, right?
He
behaves that way because he's trying to appeal to a certain crowd.
I mean, he wants to make himself relatable, in a sense, right?
So he's not elitist. He's not the upper echelons of society. He's
who is not
down
Trump?
The ground. It's that personality, right? It's like, okay, oh, I know what you feel. I'm here with you in Ohio. Your jobs have been lost. I'm here to bring it back. all of that jazz.
He's channeling the anger of the demographic that he's trying to address. So I think that's what it is. But so I was also curious just reading this, and obviously this is something that's a survey that's done in the US. I would be curious to see what the results would be like here in Malaysia. Mm-hmm. I wonder who would come out on top with most admired man or woman.
I think it would be Tun Mahathir would get both most admired and least admired at the same time.
Yeah, I think it would be probably quite split here as well. But do let us know what you think. Who is it that you admired most in 2019? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We are coming up on the 6:30 news now. But first, here is Last Train to London by Electric Light Orchestra, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was All That I Know by the Get Up Kids. And you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark, Wang Xiaoning and Roshan Kanisan. Now, language is a living thing, much as we are, because language changes over time. And a good example of this is the introduction of the word selfie into the Oxford Dictionary a few years back. But that's not the only word that has come about within the last 10 years. So Bloomberg Businessweek has an interesting article looking back at the 2010s, and they've compiled 58 words and phrases that really encapsulated this decade in technological development as well as business and politics. It's quite an interesting list, particularly if you go way back to the 2010s and 11s, because it's things like peak oil, April 2010, or Tea Party, and even things like Occupy in October 2011, and from as in Occupy Wall Street.
Yeah, it feels like ages ago that we had the Occupy Wall Street movement, that too big to fail was a thing. But also, just the word Tea Party, it's a sign for when US politics changed and swung a bit more to the right, when the Tea Party took control, basically, of the Republican Party and changed how things were. That's when Trump started rising as well.
Mm.
And now, not to mention peak oil, which was when oil prices were at all-time highs that time. And I think we've not gone anywhere near that since then.
No, unfortunately. Well, fortunately or unfortunately. I mean, oil prices remain one of the most volatile things. But if you look at the chart, which is true, because 10 years ago, oil was at the peak of $140 a barrel.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Yeah, and now today, of course, because of the recent issues in the Middle East, it's gone back up, but not as high as it was. It's now at $63 a barrel for... So, you know, if anything, yeah, I like that word peak oil. I remember at that time, anything related to oil was crazy. I mean, you saw our local domestic oil and gas company stock prices were at all-time highs. Petronas was really spending capex. And, you know, drilling went even further and further away from the shores because, you know, at $140, your cost of extraction didn't really matter. You could still make some money. Mm-hmm. And shale took off, all these other kind of... sources of gas were considered, but well, reality comes back to haunt us, right? So peak oil was just a phrase. It never really got there.
I mean, technically, it still is peak oil because we've never come anywhere close to that $140 price tag since then. Also aside from kind of the economic terms that have come about over the past 10 years, there's also things like binge watching. So binge watching was a term that first started to really enter the public consciousness in about 2016, and now it's so much a facet of our lives. For a lot of us.
Because streaming is no longer the disruption, right? It's the norm, isn't it? Everybody did the cord cutting, and almost most Americans, I guess, by now would have a streaming service. And yeah, you can watch what you want, when you want. Nobody bothers to even look at TVs anymore, right? I mean, nobody watches programming according to a schedule.
I mean, I was binge watching 10 years before that. And you bought DVD box sets and sat in front of your TV. Oh, I mean, 24 was all the rage back 2003, 2004.
This is legit binge watching, by the way.
Yeah, that's, Jack Bauer made you wait till the end of the episode and something would happen and then you're on to the next one. Actually, I really do feel that 24 was the start of this binge watching craze where you would be like aching to watch the next episode almost right after.
I still don't understand how they managed to pack so much time into so many things into essentially half an hour in movie time or in TV time.
Yeah, which is what makes it very difficult for me to watch a designated survivor, because it's Kiefer Sutherland playing president, and he's a very soft-spoken, mild-mannered, moderate. And you're like, I'm waiting for Jack Bauer to bust out of this character and like, show me, answer the phone, Chloe! So, you know, something like that. But yeah, binge-watching has really been
the norm, one
of the biggest words of the decade, because, I mean, we've seen one of the unicorns, Netflix was a pre-unicorn, rise into prominence.
Which finally has made some money.
Yeah, I mean, it has, but it's also spawned off other industries. I mean, it's pushed the big players like Disney, Warner, which now is part of AT&T, to make their own services. It has changed the way we watch and consume.
Now, another word that really piques my interest is this quantitative easing, which came out in November 2010.
Is this your favorite word here in the list, Shani?
No, it's a fact that for the last 10 years, we're still in this quantitative easing mode. Nothing has changed, which makes me a little bit worried about 2020, because this era of ultra-low rates where central banks are pumping money into the system, and we seem to be always at some point close to a recession, and then how much lower can rates get? So, you know, some things never change. History repeats itself.
Okay, so we're going to decide now. In 2030, we're going to look back at this conversation and we're going to see if quantitative easing was still a thing in the 2020s.
I hope not.
Well, let us know what you think. Which were some of the words that most stood out to you this decade? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We're heading into a few messages and then we'll be taking a look at social media as well as the front pages of the newspapers in just a bit. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Tenement song by Pixies, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Shunning and Roshan. Now, taking a look at the front pages of the newspaper this morning, the NST, the New Straits Times, has gone with a full page image of what looks like a infrared heat screen. So screening passengers presumably coming in from other countries, because their headline is pneumonia alert. So several countries, including Malaysia, are apparently taking precautionary measures in light of a mysterious viral illness in China's Hubei province. And this is admittedly quite an alarming front page. And it makes a little bit of sense, especially considering the fact that I think in the last week of December up until the first week of January, there have been quite a number of people down with very bad versions of the flu. Some of our colleagues even were bedridden or hospitalized for really bad cases of influenza.
Yeah, you just have to remember the SARS incident and be really like mindful of all these things, right? Mm-hmm. And because of travel, global travel, I mean, diseases spread so much. And of course, there's always this question about whether people should, you know, overuse of antibiotics actually doesn't help our immunity. But I guess that's the world for you today.
Yeah, you know, whenever someone mentions, you know, how easy it is for diseases to spread via airplanes, I just have in my mind that image from, I think it was Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Do you know, when they ended the movie with just like lines spreading across the globe following the global flight patterns. And that was a very alarming image, but it has some truth to it, right? Because when you are traveling in a plane, you're traveling in a pressurized tin can, essentially. And
sharing the air with 300 people.
Hundreds of other people.
I'm sure Boeing and Airbus won't be too flattered by the description of an airplane. But speaking of travel, the front page of The Star has a beautiful new mural in Georgetown, actually. It's on the containers in Georgetown. And the headline is See But Don't Touch. I think this is about responsible traveling. Basically, when you go somewhere, maybe don't take things away. Just leave your footprints and take nothing but memories. That's one of the lines here. And this is in conjunction with the fact that this is Visit Malaysia 2020, and we're expecting to see a lot of people come in, or hopefully a lot of people come into the country.
30 million, hopefully.
Hopefully.
Spending
their money. And then things like how to be responsible traveler. This is on page 4. It's for everyone who maybe isn't so conscious of what's appropriate for travel. Things like engage responsibly, responsible tour operators. Don't go by the roadside. Be aware of dress codes. Very, very important, especially in Asian countries.
Especially when you go to religious sites.
Yes, and then local cultures and customs as well. And obviously, don't litter. You know, I mean, these all seem like very basic things.
Oh, but people do that, you know. Yeah. You'll be surprised.
I mean, Malaysians litter. Don't, you know, we don't need to go so far as to talk about tourists.
Yeah, tourists also litter. I've actually told somebody off who threw a tin can in Dataran Merdeka. Pick it up.
Power. All the power to you there, Shani.
And
well
the,
done.
And the guy was in shock. And I was like, hello, this is very important site to us. Okay, pick it up.
Yeah, the other one here that's particularly interesting is the avoid animal attractions and shows. I think this is the, there's a bit more concern, especially when it comes to green travel, about how animals are treated when in all these shows. I mean, it, this goes back to things like the circus, right? Mm-hmm. And you see, like, when you go for these, in Sri Lanka, you've got these elephant sanctuaries and all.
Yeah.
They're slightly different, but things like riding elephants and all those can be quite harmful, especially if the, if it makes money, then they're encouraged to keep doing it, which is not good for the animals overall, especially if they're not treated well.
Water attractions as well are have come under the spotlight, especially after the Blackfish documentary, when it really talked about the welfare of the animals, you know, the whales and the dolphins who are induced to perform in places like SeaWorld, for example.
Yeah, and then, okay, for me on the Malaysian Reserve, because I always get the boring business papers, right?
They're hardly boring.
Please, you love it. Don't lie.
Yeah, it is true. Anyway, for the first front page of the Malaysian Reserve, it's contenders for Malaysia's maiden digital banking licenses. We know they issued a kind of consultative paper, so we might get a final paper in the middle of the year, and I think the Reserve is already speculating who would be the players involved, and that's on the front page. As for The Edge Financial Daily, they've got actually an interesting article here. It's about the front page is the listed firms' legal sagas continue into 2020. And this story continues on page 4, and it lists all the different companies which are fighting each other in the legal world. So you've got AirAsia versus Malaysian Airports, Samantan Estates versus Government of Malaysia, Felda and FGV versus Mohamed Issa, merger of JF, Apex and Mercury Securities, and this one, Transmile, which has been an ongoing saga for the last 10 years. So, you know, I'll be interested to see whether any of them come to any conclusion this year.
All right, and also just taking a very quick look at the front page of Sinar Harian, they've gone with an international story, specifically about the fact that the Iraqi parliament has expelled American troops. And this is something that we're going to be talking about later on in the show, particularly after the 7 o'clock news when we enter the business end of the morning run, because it is a crazy world indeed that we live in. And in line with that, here is A Wild World by Mr. Big to take you into the news. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.